Hello, I'm Kirsty Young. Thank you for downloading this podcast of Desert Island Discs from BBC Radio 4. For rights reasons, the music choices are shorter than in the radio broadcast. For more information about the programme, please visit bbc.co.uk/radio4. My castaway this week is the chef René Redzepi. His restaurant, Noma, in Copenhagen, has just been named the best in the world for a fourth time and is garlanded with Michelin stars. His cooking captures not just the essence of his homeland, using ingredients like reindeer tongue, sea buckthorn or fish scales, but also a strong flavour of now. He believes traditional notions of luxury are outdated. A sense of time and place are his kitchen's guiding principles. His childhood was split between Denmark and Macedonia, where he spent his summers foraging in the woods and catching fireflies for fun. He as good as stumbled into catering just before it was fashionable because he couldn't think of anything better to do, but pretty quickly realised that cooking, creating, allowed him to dream. He says, "The day when there is no more to do is the day when you're burned out. There are endless possibilities. It's just whether you can see them or not, and right now I can see plenty." You say that cooking allowed you to dream then. Now, any chef that I speak to tells me that working in a kitchen is a sort of hellhole, really. It's pressurised, it's blisteringly hot, there are constant demands for service. Yeah. I'm wondering when you dream.
Well, that happens constantly, all the time. You know, when it's winter, I dream of spring, for instance. And when it's spring, I dream of summer. And when it's summer, I dream of the berry season. But I think dreaming, using your imagination, is something that's splendid to do in cooking, because there's so many ways of using ingredients, and there's so many ingredients. When you actually start seeing the world as your one big larder, then you can really start dreaming.
Yes, you've said that cooking is one of the most magical things you can do. Are you talking about the alchemy of putting tastes together? Or?
If you go to where the ingredients are, and it's early winter, and you're brushing the leaves out of the forest floor and you can see the young shoots coming out ready for spring, and you follow them in the weeks coming. And then when they're ready, you harvest them, you transport them back, and then you clean them, you process them, you cook them, and then you serve them right there that day for dinner. And people have a little moment. To me, that's just magic. You know, a moment that can only happen that day. It's just magic.
I'm a little bit worried for you because you're only 36 and yet you've reached the very top of your profession already. You once said that I think perhaps if you reach number one, it's the beginning of the end.
Yeah.
Do you worry about that?
Oh, yeah. I had one of those burnouts where, you know, people were telling me, "That's it. You're so young and you've already reached the ultimate goal. What are you going to do with the rest of your life?" And the funny thing is that I had never opened Noma with the ultimate goal of receiving accolades. You know, the ultimate goal was the understanding of what is the mouthful of our region. How does our region taste? And I truly believe that we don't understand that yet. We are infants in that respect.
Let's have some music then, René Redzepi. Tell me about your first choice today. What are we going to hear?
Well, it's a song called Linda Nena, which is a very classic tune in the Latin American countries. And especially Latin America everywhere, but particularly Mexico, has become my second home. That's where I go to tap out from kitchens.
Conejo Hizo Combo with Linda Nena. So tell me, René Redzepi, before something makes it onto a plate in front of a customer in your restaurant, mm-hmm. how long will it have been tried and tested for?
Well, hopefully not too long, although sometimes it you know, an idea, you know, come into fruition, it can take months at times. I prefer the moments where the intuition comes into play and immediately it happens. Unfortunately, to be able to have a team where the intuition is so strong and so vigorous, it takes years and years of practice to get there. So typically, sometimes we spend literally months and months and months working on a carrot dish.
Now, it's interesting you choose carrots because I understand 80% of the food that makes it onto your menu is vegetable-based.
Yeah.
That's very unusual unless you're a vegetarian restaurant because people who come into a Michelin-starred restaurant would expect the filet mignon and the foie gras. Do you get disappointed diners? How do you explain to them that actually you do things differently?
I mean, of course we do get disappointed diners. It's impossible not to at any restaurant. But this sort of old-fashioned ideal of what luxury is, it's something that I do not agree with at all. And once starting to explore the place that we were in Scandinavia, we're 25 million people in a landmass that's enormous. There's so much wilderness. And most of it is covered in vegetation. It was a natural inspiration for us. And then I also start thinking about my childhood. What did I eat when I was a kid? And we ate mostly plants and vegetables and lentils and beans. Why did we do that? Well, if we wanted meat, we had to slaughter one of the animals. And if you slaughtered one of them, there would be less milk, there would be less eggs and so on. So it was a rare treat. And then I started just changing completely my view on vegetables. Whereas before I'd seen them as simple garnishes, I could now suddenly see them as something strong enough to stand alone, to be the lead guitarist of a dish.
You employ somebody who's called a forager, who goes out into these beautiful forests and so on and finds the right stuff to cook. Do you test whether or not it's poisonous?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I would not encourage anybody to go out there without knowing what they're doing. There are things out there that can literally kill you.
Yeah.
Do not do that. We have professional people that have studied this that forage for us.
There are people, and I'm sure you've had them as customers, people who think, well, if I'm paying top dollar, then I expect the expensive ingredient. And there you are, sort of slinging something on my plate that's been on the beach or in the forest.
Yeah.
You know, is it not just a very convenient dressed-up way of, you know, just keeping the cost down a little bit?
Oh, I wish we were piling in the money. Unfortunately, it's all like that. But I will have to say something here because caviar is expensive. Anybody who has enough money can get it. But every year for 2 weeks, chicken of the woods comes into season in Denmark.
And it's a mushroom.
It's a mushroom.
Yes.
And they can grow up to 5-6 kilos big. Now, there's three people that know where to get it, two places in Denmark, and maybe they'll get there, maybe they won't get there. And then when you get it in, you have to age it for 2 weeks because you want to dry off some of the water, and then you roast it whole and you carve it like a steak. It might be for free in nature, but don't tell me that's not more valuable than a kilo of caviar that everybody who has enough money can buy.
Time for some music. Second disc of the morning, René Redzepi. Tell me what we're going to hear now.
Yeah, it's a chunk of The Sorcerer's Apprentice. When I was a kid, every winter we used to go to my grandparents' house. And he was the only one in the family who had a VCR. And we would watch the Disney shows. And so this just reminds me of my childhood tremendously.
Was part of The Sorcerer's Apprentice, composed by Paul Dukas from the soundtrack of Disney's Fantasia. So, René Redzepi, your mother's Danish. Your father was originally Albanian?
Yes, originally grown up in former Yugoslavia, in what is today known as Macedonia.
And how did they come to meet your mum and dad?
Well, there was a little ad in the local newspaper in Macedonia, and it said, Denmark is looking for labor. And it was a bad time to be in Macedonia after Second World War. So my father thought, cool, I'm trying that one out. And he went and he did all the typical immigrant jobs. And at one point, he found himself being a dishwasher at an espresso bar. And I actually live right nearby now. And my mother, she was the young 17-year-old cashier that fell in love with this dark stranger.
And that Macedonian background actually proved to be very important to you. I mean, you were very connected to your father's background. You traveled there a lot as a kid. Tell me about that.
Yeah. In fact, when we were children, we used to say, we're going home. And so we used to go there and we used to spend long summers there, sometimes months, sometimes 6 months there, some years. And you go there to Macedonia, you live in a mud house. The animals have the two rooms in the first floor, and on top there's two rooms where the whole family of three generations live together.
So that's a very traditional farming setup. You know, the animals are on the ground and you're above.
Oh, yeah. It was quite traditional. It was a tough life. In the daytime, the men, they would be out on the fields and working with, you know, metal tools with their hands.
And what were you doing?
That's the special thing. Back then, I thought of it as just being, you know, when I came back to Denmark, I thought, oh, everybody's been somewhere exotic and they've been to a real swimming pool. I've been out on the fields picking wild berries and chestnuts. I thought it wasn't sort of glamorous enough. And today, of course, I could totally see how that had made me become the cook I am today.
Parents now, of course, think it's getting harder and harder to give their kids those sorts of experiences. You're a father of two, about to be a father of three, very young kids. Do you try somehow to connect them with that experience?
Yeah. It's amazing. Right now, when they're so young, one of the best things that they enjoy is actually to go with me in a forest and just eat things. Now, later on in life, when they be grown up and become jaded, I'm sure they will reject it. But right now, they love it. And they both go to this kindergarten where a bus picks them up in the center of the city, and then they drive to the forest where there's a little cottage in the forest. And I know that my daughter, she's very proud when the March violets comes out or when nettles comes, she's the one who picks them and eats them and explains to the others what's edible and what's not.
And your own rather idyllic sounding Macedonian experience, as you say, of course, the former Yugoslavia, it had to come to an end because, of course, the trouble started. Do you remember that?
I remember it vividly, actually. We had a smashing day, going to the bakery and getting bread, and the women there making rose water for you when you're thirsty, and catching fireflies, playing soccer. And then we went to bed, and in the middle of the night we got woken up. It was my father and my uncle, and they took us and they said, we're leaving. Then we went to the car, and then we start driving, and I remember that I stood up in the back of the car and looked behind me, and there was my whole family, aunties, cousins, everybody standing there crying and waving. And that was because the trouble was about to start in what was known as Yugoslavia. And they were worried that my father would be locked in the country. So we had to leave abruptly, like just then.
Let's have some music, Reni Redzepi. We're on your third choice. Tell me about this.
Ooh, yeah, this is a special one. This is another childhood memory. I was with my friend, his name is Michael, and he said, do you want to listen to some music? I was very young. I said, sure, what is it? And he said, it's something called hip-hop. And then he played Run DMC, It's Like That.
That was Run DMC and It's Like That. Now, clear something up for me, Reni Redzepi. Mm-hmm. Did you get thrown out of school?
I wanted to finish my 10th grade in school, and they told me after 9th grade, they said, we do not want you more in our school. I was not a good school kid. let's just say like that. There was a few moments where I actually fell asleep and I woke up and everybody had left.
In Denmark, 9th grade is how old?
You're 14?
Oh, you were young then. And you had a twin brother. Was he falling asleep in class too?
No. Star student.
Was he?
He swallowed books. He was, like, incredible.
And how did you two get on?
Good. I mean, you know, when you're from 8 to 14, There's been some punches thrown. Let's just say like that. I mean, today he's my twin brother. I see, you know, he actually works at the restaurant with me. He's sort of a guy who takes care of everything that needs to be taken care of. He's okay. The go-to guy.
And apart from falling asleep in class, what other things are you getting up to at school?
Sports, girls. There was a few years where I was very interested in weed. But mostly sports, you know. I had a big dream of becoming a basketball player, but of course I became a short, hot-tempered Balkan boy that doesn't really fit with playing basketball.
When did you realise that actually cooking might be quite interesting? You ended up, like a lot of people do, or certainly used to do, not anymore, I suspect, you sort of fell into catering because it's what people who didn't know what else to do did.
Yeah, it was my best friend at the time. He wanted to be a cook always. So I just followed him. I told myself, what I have to lose, I can be with my friend. And then the magic happened. In the first week of school, I can't remember what day, the teacher wanted us to do a competition. And I teamed with my friend Michael. And we would be asked to choose a recipe. And then we'd be judged on the flavor of it and how it looked. I remember it so vividly. That was one of the first adult moments of my entire life. And then the question came, so what do I like about food? And you're there, 15 years old, and you're thinking, why do you suddenly ask yourself these questions? Mm. And then I came back to Macedonia, to one specific moment that still to this day stands out as one of the moments of my life. Back then, there was no phone, so people just dropped by. And when family members dropped by, us, the kids, we were happy because we knew a feast was coming up. And so I remember vividly the way that my uncle took the two fattest chickens. And I remember how he slaughtered them, how he chopped the head off and their flapping corpses would be running around and us, the kids, running after them. And then the moment when, you know, my aunt and the other women, they would pluck the chicken and put salt and rub them with spices and condiments and chuck them in the wood-fired oven. And you just watch mesmerized as they went from that pale yellow to golden and brown. And then when they were carried to the table as a trophy almost, wow, it's just one of those moments. And it's still the best chicken I've ever had. So when we were in the library at the school, I found the chicken recipe. And the chicken was with a cashew nut sauce. And that's where my second adult moment comes to life. Because I thought it has to be with the cashew nut sauce because it's something new. I didn't understand why that intrigued me. But I wanted to cook something new, something I haven't seen before. And so we cooked it. And then the third adult moment came. And it was my friend Michael. He was about to spoon that chunky sauce over the chicken. And we had just neatly organized that bowl of rice. We'd stuffed it onto to a bowl and, you know, put it on the plate and lifted the bowl so it stood there like a perfect monument. Mm-hmm. And I said, stop. No. Don't you see? There's just a little place right here. And that's also one of those moments where I stand there and think to myself, what's going on with you, Renee? Mm. Why does it matter where the sauce is? Why are you suddenly thinking like this? I almost got scared.
You said that you loved sports. Did it matter that it was a competition? Had that fired something
in you? I think so.
Well?
Yes. I definitely think so. I mean, I wanted to win, which I didn't.
You did later. Let's have some music then. What are we going to hear now?
We are going to hear... it's one of the first time I ever bought an album. I went to the record shop and I wanted to buy Iron Maiden, Phantom of the Opera. And the guy at the record shop, he gave me Andrew Lloyd Webber, Phantom of the Opera, presumably because he thought, this guy, you're not supposed to listen to Iron Maiden, but I really like Iron Maiden.
That was Iron Maiden's Phantom of the Opera. Noma is internationally renowned. The people that know at Restaurant Magazine have just voted it the best restaurant in the world for the fourth time. You have two Michelin stars. Mm-hmm. Tell me what it was like when you first opened.
An empty restaurant.
No other customers.
No other customers. And it was a messy place. We were messy. I mean, here we were trying to understand what is the flavor of this region. And I did some major mistakes initially, such as I thought that if I just took the local ingredients and put them into existing recipes, say I would take the crème brûlée, which we all know, and I would put Danish cream and Danish sugar and a Danish berry in there and thought I had done something that was Danish.
It doesn't sound too bad.
It tastes good. We got a Michelin star out of that. But it wasn't a new flavor. It wasn't something that felt like you're tapping into a culture and into a people.
And why was that important to you? Because at that point you were in your very early 30s. You had cooked at some of the best restaurants in the world. Why was that not enough for you?
Well, I wanted to do something that was my own. I wanted to have my own sort of cooking voice.
And how was your behaviour in the kitchen? Of course, these days, you know, there's a reality programme about everything, and there's certainly plenty of reality programmes here in the UK and in the US about cooking. And we think we know how chefs behave. They are very, very bad-tempered. They shout a lot. How was your kitchen?
I was the same. I was terrible. I'd always told myself I wasn't going to be like that because all the kitchen I'd been in, I'd seen it. And some kitchen I'd been in, I'd even seen people getting beat up. And I told myself, one thing I learn is not to be like that. And then suddenly you're there and the pressure just grows and it grows and it grows and there's no money. And I started becoming very angry and very miserable.
And what was your moment of epiphany then? Was there a point at which you scraped the bottom?
There was one specific moment where I knew that it was going into something that I couldn't control any longer. It's not that many years ago. And it was spring. It was a great day, actually. And we were busy as usual, understaffed as usual. And I was walking to work and people were bustling around me, cars and bikes. And out of the blue, I had this overwhelming sensation of not being able to walk anymore. And I remember telling myself, I feel like laying down and crying. And I stood there. And I felt so weak, like I've never felt before. And I probably stood for 5-6 minutes. And I'd already sort of surrendered to the thought that this was going to happen. And I was thinking, who's going to take care of me? Who can carry me back to my apartment? Mm. I was really, really, really having one of those crazy moments. I haven't had it since, luckily. But then we used to have a girl called Astrid. And she was an apprentice. And I thought, I can't do this. She's going to be alone in the section. Come on, snap your way out of this. And I did. And that was also one of the moments where I said, okay, there's no longevity in this. I'm just going to run myself down. And I started really analyzing, what is it? What's the fun of all this? Why is the point of things?
Much more in a moment. For now, Rennie, let's fit in some music. Tell me what we're going to hear now. We're on your fifth.
Yeah. One of my favorite movies growing up was The Labyrinth. David Bowie was in it. It was the first album I ever bought. It was difficult to choose between Queen and David Bowie because I listened to both of them quite a bit. So I put them together and we're going to listen to Under Pressure.
It was Queen and David Bowie and Under Pressure. So Rennie Redzepi, rather appropriately named, I have to say, that track, because you were just describing to us that moment when you realised that actually the bell had rung in your head. It could not go on like this. You were successful. You'd certainly made your name.
Yeah.
And yet things had to change. So what did you do to change them?
Well, I did many, many, many things. I, first of all, told myself, okay, everything that I can afford to change for the staff, I'm going to do that. I'm going to spend all the money on staff. So what I did, I tried to take as much of the bad pressure away. One of the bad things we had was a banquet room. That huge amount of work for, you know, 100 covers at one time. Mm. It's just not fun. It might be lucrative and great and all that. I closed that room. Money. I didn't tell my partners. I didn't tell my accountant.
Right.
I just said, we're going to do this because it's a matter of survival. And we built a staff room, a place to sit and eat. There was an espresso bar, built a library in there. And then I also put music in our kitchens, which was probably the biggest hurdle for me mentally. Because having grown up in the very sort of classic brigade system.
The whole yes chef culture.
The whole military discipline. And so putting music into that equation was, considered unserious. If you had music in your kitchens, you were basically just a little cafe of some sorts. So it was a big moment to me to install those speakers and buy that system and say, guys, here's the remote now. Let's see what it does to us.
Do you enjoy eating in places other than your own restaurants and your own kitchen at home? Do people get scared cooking for you? They get nervous, I guess. I bet they do.
Yeah, they actually do. I hear that all the time.
I bet you never get asked around to dinner, do you?
My wife only now, after 9 years and 2 children, she's comfortable in cooking for me.
Let's have some music. Tell me what we're going to hear next.
We're going to hear a tune that's called Spitting Blood. And I had 5 years of my professional career where spitting blood happened.
That was Woo Life and Spitting Blood. So, René Redzepi, you work an 80-hour week, but you only work those 80 hours in 5 days now. You're not in the kitchen 7 days a week. Is that right?
Yeah, that's my family time. I do also have family times in the morning. That's my time with the kids. I wake up early. We do breakfast. And I have to say that I enjoy that better. The few times that I've left work early in the rush hour where any father or mother is leaving work, rushing to get their children and then shop and then cook food. You know, that moment is just the most stressful moment. And breakfast is much easier.
And Noma didn't just give you this worldwide reputation. It gave you your wife too. That was where I understand you met your future wife.
We used to do all these weird things initially when we opened 10, 11 years ago to stay afloat. One of them was to have an outdoor cafe in Copenhagen. It was just such a bad idea. We thought, let's put up a barbecue. And then, of course, it rains for 6 weeks. And then you have the young student that's hired in. Yeah. And then you make her your wife.
And so you have 2 children and 1 on the way, and your wife still works with you.
Yeah, she does. She does all the bookings. Yeah. Yes. And then I do actually take 40 days off every year where I just take off. And it's not just me that gets this. The staff gets 5, or sometimes they want 6 weeks off. I think if you want to have a joyous, creative life, that's what you need. You need vacation.
Do your parents come to the restaurant?
They do.
What do they think of the food?
My mother, she's so proud. My father, it's not for him. Remember, he grew up after Second World War in former Yugoslavia, eating the same pot of beans every day.
It's too rarefied.
It's just not for him. I mean, I'm happy that he feels like that. And I remember when we got our second Michelin star, and I called him up and said, "Father, father, we have our second Michelin star." And then he said, "That's good, son. Now you can support your family." And, you know, it's a little lesson to him. The measure of success is that you support your family. That's what worried him most of his life.
Let's have some more music then. We're on your 7th.
Yes, this is one of the favorites in the kitchen. You have to listen to this and envision a Tuesday morning, 40 cooks, sleepy, getting ready for a long week. How do you wake them up? And we do that by playing Metallica, and this is One.
I can't remember anything. Can't tell if this is true or dream. Deep down inside, I feel the scream. This terrible silence stops in there. Now that the war is through with me, I'm waking up, I cannot see that there's not much left in me. Nothing is real but pain now. Hold my breath as I wish for death. Oh, please, God, wake me.
That was Metallica and One, something to get your kitchen brigade pumped before they start service on a sleepy Tuesday morning, Reni Redzepi. You mentioned that in your life outside of the kitchen, one of your favourite parts of the day is breakfast time, the start of the day. What would I find you making for yourself and for your kids?
Well, it could be a steaming hot bowl of porridge of various grains. It could also be, which is something that I actually did on Sunday, it was a broth of chicken. And with that, I took grated cauliflower that I sautéed on a pan and I put that into the broth with a poached egg.
And will your kids eat that for breakfast?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know I'm going to cast you away, Reni Redzepi, to this island, but you will be where you like to be. Mm-hmm. You'll be among nature. Now, being mm-hmm. in nature is something that is, well, we've heard it, is terrifically important to you. So presumably you'll rather like that experience of being on your own in nature.
Oh, yeah. I would. I love that for the rest of my life without my kids and my wife. I'm not too sure. But of course, being in nature, just walking in parks or going to a shoreline, that's not only where I find inspiration, that's also where I fuel up as a human being.
Of course, you're part of this big team. We've heard a lot about them today. How are you with your own company?
It's been so many years, I don't even know. I have kids, I wake up, I go to work. I don't have any time for myself anymore.
Do you crave it?
I don't mind, actually. But when you ask me, how am I being all alone, I can't remember the last time I did that.
Let's have your final piece then, Reni Redzepi. Tell me about your eighth disc of the day.
Yeah, this is a band that I grew up with listening to a lot. And my brother specifically grew up with this. He was so fueled by them. And he was trying to do music on his computer back then. And so it's really a sound of my childhood. And this is Kraftwerk with Autobahn.
Was Kraftwerk and Autobahn. So, Reni, I'm going to give you the books now.
Yeah.
You get to take the Bible and the complete works of Shakespeare to the mm-hmm. island, and you get to take another book along with it, a book of your own. What would you like to take?
This was extraordinarily difficult. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, why don't I bring something that I know that I would never read because I don't have time, like Proust or something. Mm-hmm. And then I thought, no. You know, if I'm alone on an island, I need something fun. So I'm going to choose the complete works of Mad Magazine.
Okay. That's yours then. And a luxury too, something that will make this Spartan life just a little bit more bearable.
Yeah, that was also difficult. Mm-hmm. First, I thought I would like a sun-driven espresso machine. But then I thought, no, I need something that also reminds me of home. So I think I'm actually going to choose One Full Day of Snow.
One Full Day of Snow. Right, you shall have it. That, indeed, will be your luxury.
Yeah.
And a track to save. If the waves were to wash the shore and you had to pick one disc, which one would it be?
It would be Metallica.
It's yours, Reni Redzepi. Thank you very much for letting us hear your Desert Island Discs.
Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to a download from the BBC. You'll find more information on the Radio 4 website, bbc.co.uk/radio4.